Welcome back to Romans 1, everybody, and welcome back to court. Now, the content here gets PG-13 in a hurry, so cut this now if the kids are listening. We're spending extra time here because this passage is so important. This is the gospel in full detail. Now remember, you promised to hear this through to chapter 3. Taking one passage here without the rest is dangerous. Also remember, this is about how to get right with God, eternally right. But first, Paul will prove that on our own, we are not right. As we step back into the courtroom, allow me to repaint the scene for you. Everyone has been invited, but it's not entirely clear who is on trial. The wicked stepped into court with guilt written all over them. They sat down in the defendant's chair. The godless walked into the viewing area at the back, questioning the validity of the court and challenging the authority of the so-called Almighty Judge. And of course, the religious are here, and they have appointed themselves to the jury box, ready to pass judgment on all the rest. Paul is presenting the case against, and to the surprise of the godless, he started with them. His first order was to thoroughly debunk their excuses, and as you may recall, mine with them. We claimed that we didn't know God, yet the evidence surrounds us. And when we refused to glorify or even thank God, we became fools. We traded immortal God for idols, fakes. And now as Paul picks up his case in verse 24, he turns to the wicked, though we realize now the godless and wicked are one and the same. All stand accused. And the religious are kind of loving it. Remember, hear it through to the end. For the godless, losing God meant losing morals. And in verse 24, therefore God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. God gave them over, meaning he allowed their free will. And once set free, mankind jumped right in to sinful sex. Now let's be clear on this. I believe that God made sex good. And whatever your faith is, I hope we can all see that sex has power. Sex has the power to create a living human being. It has the power to express love profoundly and to make a person feel amazing. Sex can drive a person's desire and will. But misused, sex also has the power to destroy a life, the power to express vile hatred. It can drive a person to destroy convictions, break promises, and lose all faith and trust with the ones they love. Sex is powerful, and regardless of your faith, it should not be taken lightly. Now, bringing God back into this equation, God also made sex holy. That means it is set apart. It has a special place. It's like fire. Fire is beautiful and useful and amazing in its place. But if you fail to respect the power of fire, if you ignore the rules and set your house on fire, it can destroy everything you hold dear. In the Bible, sex is holy and set apart for marriage. Outside of that, the fire destroys. And notice, Paul calls sexual impurity the degrading of their bodies. That means God gave you your body. It's good, but we degrade it, cheapen it, when we give in to lust. Verse 25. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie. Notice the connection between idolatry and adultery. Look through history at the practice of pagan religions around the world. Temple prostitution is common. Generally, it is young men and women forced into it, what we call human trafficking. Yet this prostitution is in the name of worship of their idols. It's a common practice. And remember Balaam in the Old Testament, who couldn't manage to curse the Israelites, but tricked them into worshiping idols by sending in pagan women to seduce the men, then worship idols. The lure of sex is powerful, and many have sacrificed their own convictions at its altar. Now, the verses that follow are controversial, to say the least. For the purpose of this study, I will avoid that controversy. I will say, from my vantage point, there is great danger in focusing solely on these two verses. Out of context, they are often misused. However, there is equal danger, in my view, in ignoring these verses. they require special attention in full context with careful understanding. So I will save that for a separate study on the Through the Word app and podcast, where I will do my best to present a balanced and clear explanation of several viewpoints and alternate teachings on this passage. There are several views. As for me, I am not the final authority. I'm just good at explaining stuff. And absolutely key to explaining any passage is its context. So for this study, that's my focus, full context, which is why we can't leave until the end. These two verses here are known in some circles as one of the clobber passages, because some of us Christians have picked the passage out of its context and used it to clobber people. Seriously. And thinking back to younger me, I am not without guilt. Now, I'm not telling anyone to ignore the passage. It's important. But Christian, listen, we know from 1,000 passages that we are called to compassion, mercy, understanding, and above all, love for everyone. So if one passage makes you clobber people without compassion, you are probably missing something. In fact, this passage does not tell you to do that at all. But back in our courtroom, I kind of get the feeling that those religious people sitting up in the jury box, they kind of like this passage, proving everyone else guilty, and they wouldn't mind doing a little clobbering themselves. But spoiler alert, they will get there soon, which is why we need to keep moving forward. Verse 28, furthermore, just as they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, notice that phrase, didn't think it worthwhile. They got busy, and knowing God just wasn't worth the time. Happens to a lot of us. So it says, God gave them over to a depraved mind, so that they do what ought not to be done. There, in that place, too busy for God, we do a lot of bad. Notice, Paul doesn't single out just one sin. In verse 29, they've become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Paul presses in hard, the deeds of the godless and the wicked laid bare, and now he pushes in for a conviction. 32. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these very things, but also approve of those who practice them. So Paul slams the case shut. They knew it was wrong, yet they did it anyway. The excuses of the godless lie empty. The deeds of the wicked sit open for the court, like secret web searches now revealed to the world. Remember a few years back, Ashley Madison users, all those people who went online to cheat on their spouse until they all got revealed for the whole world to see? Yeah, this is like that, caught with no way out. Ever been there? Guilty as sin with nowhere to hide? And the worst part of it all is the smug look of all the self-righteous hypocrites leering at you from the jury box. And then the pause. And Paul turns to face the jury box, and all the religious look back at him, ready to pronounce the verdict. And in chapter 2, verse 1, you, therefore, have no excuse, you who pass judgment on someone else, for at whatever point you judge another, you are condemning yourself, because you who pass judgment do the same things. Shock fills the courtroom. Paul set them up. Every smug, self-righteous hypocrite in the world, every believer who ever used Romans 1 to judge and condemn someone else, Paul says, you are condemning yourself. Turns out, Ashley Madison's list has some religious people on it. This case is not closed. We will return in chapter 2. Don't walk out now. This is about to get good.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.